Hello and welcome to the What You've Been Watching podcast.
We will not start the show on that.
Yeah, we will.
No, we won't. No, we won't.
I'm just going to keep going. Okay. Just steamroll it. Hello, friends, and welcome to the What You've Been Watching podcast. I am your host, the marvelous Mike Dudley, joined as always by my co-host, cohort, and youngest brother.
MD3 Marcus Quality Assurance Dudley. Checking in with you, Mr. QAQC himself. What is going on out there in podcast land? We are broadcasting live from the Whatcha Been Watching Studios right here in the shadows of Doak Campbell Stadium. We'll call it Whatcha Been Watching Studio South, you know, here in Tallahassee.
That's right.
You can find us at, or please write us in actually, at whatchabeenwatchinpodcast@gmail.com. We are on Instagram at whatchabeenwatchin. All new to the game there, trying That's to get right. our social media presence. Where else can they find us, my brother?
They can find us online at facebook.com/Dudley Bros Podcast. Or, you know, we out here in them streets, you know. I was walking dogs.
I was selling bootleg vape juice. Quite lucrative, actually. What I did, though, is it's just
cigarette butts and melon.
I just take cigarettes and squeeze them from rainwater, and I just add a little bit of lemon. And I shake it up promptly, and I go, there you go. Seems to be working.
Seems to be working. Pipe and smoke it.
Yeah, they do. They do.
It's better than that Chinese shit.
Man, it's whatever. I just smoke. Just smoke real cigarettes. That's how I feel about it. I don't know. I'm tired of going to movie theaters and be like a real dramatic point in here.
He's talking specifically about going to the movies with me.
Yes.
I am that guy.
Most people.
I always make a point to sit in the extreme back row so that my cloud of fume doesn't offend anyone.
Just goes directly in front of the projector.
It's all right. You know, gives it a nice smoky ambiance. You know, like one of the old school, old timey theaters.
I guess. I just don't get the entitlement. But here nor there. I have no room to judge. I've smoked worse than movie theater before. But it was just me. So.
Pole.
Yeah, probably. Anyways. What's been up, man?
Oh, big things happening, man. Transitions.
Oh, yeah? Anything you can talk about on the air?
You know, moving in with the lovely Liz, finally. We're making the leap.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thanks, man. She finally convinced me that I was being a dork and living a bachelor lifestyle was not conducive to...
reality?
I was going to say romantic inclinations, but sure, yeah, reality. So yeah, I'm taking the leap, you know. I was talking to somebody about it, and they're like, well, do you think you're ready? And I'm like, dude, I mean, whether I am or not, like, it's kind of time, you know? Like, I'm as ready as I'm going to be at this point, so.
Yeah, I mean, it's all, and Liz, I hope you're listening, but
it
is what it is, man, in the sense of, you know, I've been in a long-distance relationship. It was really sad at night knowing that, like, man, there's somebody that loves me very much, and I'm away from them, and mm-hmm. this and that and the third, but the trade-off is, ultimately, you know, I got to do, I mean, short of, like, things that would break the confines of being in a relationship, so I'm not saying that, but largely I got to do what I want to do whenever I wanted to do it. It's like, what do you want for dinner? Oh, I don't know, whatever I want for dinner.
That's right.
I'm bored, I'm going to go see a movie. There's no, oh, what do you want to go see? Can you, like, you should just do it?
Right.
I mean, the trade-off, I'm grateful for the trade-off, to be honest with you, so.
I mean, I was hopefully trying to keep something a little more, like, low key, low stress,
yeah,
solid commitment, fuck buddy. But you know, apparently that wasn't in the card, so that's all right.
Nope.
You know, it's worth the trade off, I think.
I think the older you get, the less realistic that is, my friend. Which
I mean, but there's a direct inverse to how much money you have. If you got enough money, you can do whatever the fuck you want.
Yeah, that's true. That's a whole different conversation, though. Whole different conversation.
Which brings us to buy our merchandise now out there.
Yeah. There's going to be some stickers. If they're not already out there now, there's going to be some stickers coming y'all's way. We're going to try to get the shirts game rolling again.
That's right.
We've just been kind of dipping our toe in it. We are going to be on Facebook very soon. You hear my words on that. We're going to be on there very soon, even if it's just a single camera.
So. Now, YouTube.
Oh, what did I say? Facebook? Oh.
But we can do Facebook Live. That's cool, too. No. We'll come to all your streaming platforms.
Yeah, I meant the YouTube. But we're going to try to do some other things here coming up very soon. We really are working on it behind the scenes. But I appreciate y'all's patience in the meantime.
Yeah.
Also, before we get any further, just get all these plugs out the way. You already know the beautiful banner is done by @MKDudleyArt, right?
Correct. Yes, sir.
And the music that you're going to hear... A1reality.music@gmail.com. It's reality music. Mr. A1, he's a quadruple threat. The man sings, he raps, he does beats. He, Olympic skier.
Fine pottery.
Yeah, yeah, you know.
Owns made out of seashells.
Owns a kiln.
And also shout out to Kesta for Always Bright for the lovely intro music. Always a banger. Always makes me happy to hear that because I know that the soothing, dulcet tones of them Dudley boys about to be coming in your ear holes.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. But on that note, my friend, why the people tune in? We got all the plugs out the way. What you been watching, my brother?
My man, I just finished, literally today, Squid Game. And I know I'm a little bit behind on that one, but fortunately, I managed to keep it spoiler-free. So it actually was a surprise ending for me.
Oh, nice. Nice. I mean, I could guess the ending, just given the nature of the game itself. That there had to be a sole survivor.
Sure.
I mean, that's the only thing that just... I know that they were probably trying to aim for two people to win, and that was the whole crux of it, maybe, is maybe you find a partner that you can split this with or just shatter the games.
Well, sure. I mean, that's sort of the whole point of the series is seeing, you know, they start off with, I want to say, like 450, 460, something like that, players, and literally start whittling them down to the sole survivor through games of death. So it's all like... It's all kids' games, you know, like they play a round of marbles and stuff like that. They play essentially what's red light, green light, but if you move, you get shot. Let's see, what are some other games? They set up a bridge between two points, and it's basically like a two-lane road. So but on each lane, there's different panes of glass, and one of them is tempered and can hold your body weight, and the other one is not tempered, and as soon as you step through it, you will fall through. So, so there's this whole like moral dilemma of like you never know what game it is before you go into it. So, you know, the players walk in and there's a row of vests numbered 1 through 16, and they say just go choose your vest, and then it turns out that the number of the vest that you picked correlates with your number on going on the bridge. So number 1 goes first, number 16 goes last.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Yeah, that's tough. Yeah, that's tough. I mean, it was a global phenomenon.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It was one of the most streamed shows, like, ever. It had to break all sorts of records.
I think it might be Netflix's most watched series. It may just recently have gotten beat by something else, but I can't think of what it is. But I know it was top dog there for a long time.
South Korean cinema is just really soaring, man. Ever since Parasite won. Before that, they were doing big things, but like it really has. I think what it is that, and this is somebody was talking about this, so I'm stealing it from them, but I can't remember who it is to give them credit. But ultimately, what they were saying was that in American cinema, it's like, oh, you have this love story, and then it just doesn't work out, or they need a happy ending or whatever.
Sure, right.
And then in like Korean cinema, they'd be like, no, these two people, they don't end up together, and then the guy kills himself at the end, and we roll credits.
Right.
And it's like in Hollywood, they're like, no, we're not doing that. Right. And they are not afraid to do it.
Well, because ultimately, American cinemas, it's all carny bullshit. It's send them home happy, and they'll come back again, you know? Like, as long as you leave that cinema with a big smile on your face and, you know, talking about the good times, then you'll probably want to go back to the movies again. If you go to the movies and it's a miserable drudgery experience, you're like, fuck, I don't want to go watch another movie. Like, at least not for a while, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, you of course you have the exceptions, you know, the Schindler's Lists of it all, the Before Sunsets, all that good stuff. But
yeah, they're not all.
For the most part, it does seem to follow the Marvel Disney storyline of like, triumph and tribulations, and then they're almost going to make it, and then they fall back down, and then they have to climb the mountain again, but at the end, they get the girl, and they learn something about themselves. Wasn't it all about the friendships we made along the way?
Yeah, and South Korean cinema is just like, yeah, nope. Nope, not doing that at all.
It's actually the direct inverse of that, in as much as, like, as the series goes on, you see these different relationships and partnerships form, only to have them completely destroyed down the line, because invariably there can only be one survivor. And so at some point, either somebody has to turn on somebody, or there has to be a great tragedy that befalls and splits up the team again, and then you have to reformulate and go to a new partner, forge a new friendship, only to have that one dissolve.
It's the game of Survivor.
It is. It's a lot like Tinder, I think.
So what is it? Like, it's just impoverished people get signed up.
Pretty much, sign
a waiver and say, hey, you want to win $1 billion or whatever?
Pretty much. And for every player that dies, they add to the pot. So eventually it ends up being like, I mean, I don't know what the conversion is, but it's like 40 million like won or something like that, or 40 billion won or something like that. It ends up being close to $1 billion in America.
Yeah.
So.
Well, dang. I mean, like I said, I know it's a global phenomenon, and it's one of those things I'm sure I would really, because everyone I know that's seen it likes it.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, they spun off an American television show, I think, on Netflix.
Which is ironic, because the whole point of the movie is it's rich people betting on the lower classes turning on each other just for their own amusement and short-sighted benefit. And then they make a show that is literally that.
They're like, they're going to skinny wrestle on this episode. Yeah. Like, watch out. Look how poor they are. Fight for our amusement.
On this game, we're just going to throw a handful of nickels in the air and see who scrambles to fight for them.
That'd be a fun show.
Fight, poors.
Yeah. It's crazy. It was lost on us Americans. We don't take that to heart. They're like, I want to play Squid Games. Like, I bet you do. Where are you from? What color county? Of course you want to play the Squid Games.
My name is Ellie Mae from Mobile, Alabama.
Yep.
And I'm here to win the Squid Games.
Yeah, thanks to Kanye's workout plan. Anyways.
Rode a plane.
Yeah, rode a plane. Oh, how I miss old Kanye so much. But anyways, plowing ahead.
Let's see.
So what was like your overall takeaway from it? And just, not just necessarily the review, did you enjoy it or not, but like, what was thematically, what did you walk away with it? Any lessons or?
That ultimately, for the most part, people are horrible and very short-sighted. And although we like to sort of play up our altruistic or our benevolent actions, you know, like there are our mercy, our generosity, like those instances are few and far between not even just cruelty, but just apathy, just walking by and not caring, just not even seeing it, you know. Even though within the game there are certainly people that directly lead to the, you know, to like killing people, like they lead to other players' eliminations, you know, pushing them off the bridge or straight up murdering them or whatever. Like, the amount of people within the game that still see it and don't do anything to try and stop it or take something away from it, you know, that like their big reaction to it is like, well, one less person in the game. Look how much money they're dropping down now. So it doesn't leave you with a really good feeling, but in a weird way it left me really satisfied in terms of like it's a really good microscopic look at humanity that reveals a lot.
I like that.
Or at least from the creator's point of view. I don't know that that's necessarily how it is in the real world, you know, you could debate that, but I tend to think he's more right than wrong.
Yeah, no, I'm inclined to, and only, I think with the apathy thing, it's not even, because there's causes that I really wish that I could get on board with.
Sure, all of them.
Yeah. Which, here's a little mystery, and here's what's going to just be the truth now. A lot of people reap the benefits of my apathy,
mm-hmm.
or whatever, and only in the sense of like, I'm just going to use this really easy one that you can go with, like, gay rights and gay people getting married.
Sure.
Like, yes, and you want to know why? And the most one is because you should, but like two, one of the biggest thing that fuels a lot of this is like it doesn't affect me directly,
right?
And so like I don't see why not. It doesn't affect me directly. I do not live with you in your homes. I'm not like, oh, but this book says like I don't.
Yeah.
I care enough to like vote a certain way or to be like, hey, you know, let's steer a conversation. Like I'm not going to partake in a conversation that's anti. Like, largely, if the bigger slice of the entire pie is I don't care. And I'm right. I'm not because I don't care about people and their rights. I'm just apathetic because I have enough of my own shit to deal with.
Yes.
That I cannot pick up the sword for every single cause.
Oh my god.
So like people reap the benefits. A lot of people do reap the benefits of like me just being apathetic and not having the energy, you know?
But at least your apathy isn't, I mean, your apathy is at least directed in the sense of like, hey man, do whatever fucking makes you happy. Like, yeah. As long as it doesn't conflict directly with my own interests, cool. Then yeah. Have at it. Like,
yeah.
Dress up as whatever you want, fuck whoever you want, as long as it's all, you know, legal and consensual.
Yeah.
I got really nothing to say about it.
Yeah. And so that's just one instance. There's other things certainly that I'm passionate about, but... So I do kind of respect the fact that the apathy that you're talking about, it's the hot word nowadays is bandwidth. You call it capacity. You can just call it mental energy, whatever.
Spoons, whatever.
Yeah. It's just I don't have...
I have no more spoons to give. All I have is my knife now.
Yeah. And so I'm kind of on board that a lot. And so I get it. And I do understand the idea just conceptually of like everyone... fancies themselves a good person, and in this circumstance I would do blank, and it's like sure. You really have no idea,
but it's easy to think that way. from the safety and security of your, you know, couch cushions and go like, well, that's what, you know, if somebody broke in here right now, I'd beat the fuck out of them. Like, no, you probably wouldn't. You'd probably be terrified and your adrenaline would be running and there's no telling what you would do. You might piss yourself and pass out,
right? Like, right. Or just if you're in the Squid Games being like, well, your chances when they're 50, you didn't get a chance to get to know all those people. By the time there's 3, it's like, oh, I know these people and have an intimate relationship with them. But now, there's only 3 people between me and fortune. You know what I mean? Right, so, right. Like, it's easier, you know, the stakes are higher for me to right. do this. So.
You start sizing people up real, like, real judgmental, like, when it starts getting narrower and narrower to victory. You know, you're like, I could probably take them. Him, I would have to worry about. Her, I could definitely take. She might give me some problems, but I think she likes me, so maybe I can work that to my advantage. And like, you start becoming so calculating, not just in terms of your physicality and your athleticism and your attributes, but like manipulating people's emotions and the relationships you have with them. You know, like it you become very, very machine-like. You know, it just becomes about like, what is the rate of my survival in this?
Yeah. Push to the edge, you know what I mean? I think that was Joker's largest point in a lot of the Batman movies, is like, given the circumstance, anybody is capable of being
making
a terrible
any choice, right?
Yeah, making any choice, which they confused and convoluted that point very much so.
That was the worst third act in a Batman movie ever. I was like, what the fuck? Actually, no, I take it back. The second worst, because the ending of Dark Knight Rises makes no fucking sense.
Yeah, it's a little more crazy. But either way, well, Squid Games, global phenomenon, what do you rate it?
Oh, let's see. I'm going to give it 17 players left standing. 14 players left standing. 12 players left standing.
Nice. Nice work. Nice work there. All right, what else have you been watching, my guy?
Let's see. After that, I watch, classic movie. Shrek, dog.
Oh, Shrek, 2000's first...
Talking about Shrek-sesses?
First animated Oscar ever given, Shrek.
Was it?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it was the first year. The best animated feature went to Shrek.
Oh, because that's right. Because Snow White got nominated, but it was for Best Picture, but it wasn't for...
Beauty and the Beast.
I'm sorry,
yeah,
yes.
Beast was the only first animated movie that got nominated for Best Picture.
Mm-hmm. But this one for Best Animated. Okay.
Yep. They just made a whole new category. Which is good and bad, because like Up still got nominated for Best Picture and Best Animated.
Mm-hmm.
But
as it should have.
As it should have, yeah. But now they're largely just like, they just don't nominate animated features for Best Picture anymore. But anyways, Shrek, please go ahead.
I mean, I loved it. What can you say? The cast is perfect. I mean, it's... all the voice actors you love, you know, Cameron Diaz and Mike Myers, Eddie Murphy. You've got John Lithgow playing Lord Farquaad, who is just a joke and a half. Visually speaking, it holds up, especially for coming out in, I guess, what this would have been, what, 2000, 2001?
2000,
like,
yeah.
It really holds up. Just fun and colorful and fantastical. yeah, not really a bad thing to say about it, man. I mean, it's if you haven't seen Shrek at this point, you're doing yourself a disservice, because it really is an entertaining, really fun, really cute movie that has a lot of humor and a lot of heart in equal doses. I know that sounds like a New York Times like write up, but I mean, what else can you say? I mean,
that was one of the first animated movies that I saw that had jokes for everyone of all ages. They had jokes for kids that were slapsticky and just right. like, and then they had jokes for adults that would go over the kids. That was the first time I remember right. seeing it.
Like written puns and, yeah. You know, humor that is easy to explain to a kid, like just explain away to a little kid, but the adults will get it and get a little chuckle out of it.
I know, I'm not, we're talking
not about, like knee slapping, you know, it's not like, my God, that's the funniest thing I've ever seen, but like, you'll get a little like, all right.
Yeah, and I, like, for example, in the second Shrek, when Puss in Boots gets arrested and a bag of catnip falls out and he's on like cops or whatever, they're going, and what's this? He goes, that's not mine, that's not mine. And it's strictly for the adults. Like, so I remember Shrek was one of the first movies to do that. And, you know, actually, I think David Spade was telling this story recently, and Chris Farley was originally supposed to be the voice of Shrek.
I did see that.
And there's they aired the footage of him doing it.
Yeah, with the hand animation. Yeah, there's actually footage out there of some of his early voice work before he, I guess he died like right before they were solidified, like right before they got officially greenlit to do the movie.
Yeah, that would have been a very different movie.
Very. Yeah. I mean, the original design for Shrek was based on Chris Farley. And then once he kind of wasn't in the picture anymore, they had to do a complete redesign and were scrambling. And then I guess it got Mike Myers at the very last, like, zero hour in terms of, like, if we don't have a star for this movie, it's not getting made.
Yeah, which Mike Myers did a phenomenal job.
Sure.
I can never take that away from him. Eddie Murphy certainly brought his thing, so.
Let's do it again.
Yeah, it was just fast-talking, annoying donkey character. It was perfect for it.
It's pretty much, yeah, it's like Eddie Murphy raw, but toned down for little kids, you know?
Yeah.
It's.
Yeah, no, the fact that he has little baby donkey dragons at the end.
That's right.
Got to try a little tenderness. Yeah, no, Shrek's a classic. Do you want to tell the story about the first time we saw Shrek?
So yes, I'm going to leave out certain names to protect the innocent, but I believe it was you, me. I don't know if MKD was there.
I think he was.
Sure, let's just Either say way. He was there. The Fuck Dudley. You were there now.
Yeah, I think
so,
he was.
So it was the Dudley trilogy plus a couple of the cousins.
It was one cousin.
To protect the innocent, it was a couple of cousins.
Anyway.
Point being, and we had been imbibing a little bit during the day. This is, I guess I would have been in senior in high school at this point, so.
I was in middle school.
Just, they can do the math, you don't have to tell them.
I don't care.
So we had been imbibing that day, and we decided, of course, as teenagers at the time do, to go to the mall. Kids, a mall was a conglomeration of stores where you could go and walk and spend untoward amounts of money in a single day, and all from the confines of air-conditioned and neon-lit department stores. And so we decide we're going to go see a movie at the local cinema, as one does. And we're standing in line. We can't decide what we want to see. I forget what was out at that point, but we're talking over the pros and cons of each one. When finally Cousin reaches out. Was that you?
It was me.
It was you. Okay. When finally Marcus reaches out and goes, bro, I got it. Shrek. And we all turned to Marcus and went, Shrek.
That's right. That's right. And we all enjoyed ourselves thoroughly. It was the best possible option at the time. It's like, I got it. Let's go see Shrek.
You were not wrong. It was probably the best choice we made all day that day.
Yeah, everyone was like, good call afterwards. But yeah, that was the first time we saw Shrek. It was a fun time. Bonding, cousinly stuff, you know, it's all good. So that movie and those moments will always hold a special place in my heart. For that reason. So
the only other good story I have about that was, I forget what the name of the movie was, but it was Anthony Hopkins and Chris Rock.
Bad Company.
Bad Company. Was that what it was called?
Yeah, we saw that the next day.
And then we went to go see it later, and I suggested, hey, let's go see Bad Company. And you guys were like, dude, we've already seen that. And I was like, did we? And you had to walk me through the whole plot, and I was like, I don't remember a thing about this movie.
Yeah.
It was. So apparently I've seen Bad Company once, maybe twice.
Yeah. Yeah, it was fun times. It was simpler times. Pepperidge Farm time.
Pepperidge Farm remembers.
Pepperidge Farm remembers. So yeah. Yeah, no, I appreciate that.
What do you think about it? What was what,
oh,
what
Shrek? Was your... I mean, it's a classic, like you said. I don't want to harp on it too much. It's an all-timer, though. I mean, if you haven't seen it, it's one of the best like family animated films of all time. I'll go off on a limb and say that. Smashing success, launched franchise. Largely, all the sequels continued to work.
For sure.
I mean, there's a little bit of fall off just in terms of diminishing returns, but the quality of the first one was so high that they had a pretty high bar, and for the most part, they maintained it. Mm-hmm. I didn't see I forget how many there are, either the fourth one or the third. I didn't see four, but they're
Shrek
all pretty good.
Shrek 4 ever?
Yeah, Shrek Happily Ever. There's five now, Shrek Happily Ever After, maybe.
Yeah.
Either way, there's a couple of them I haven't seen, but they're all pretty good across the board for the little bit I have seen. I know Justin Timberlake eventually gets involved.
Of course.
But yeah. So Shrek, I will give it a few layers of the onion.
Let's see. I will give it one highly profitable ogre.
There you go.
Yeah.
Roaring reviews. Go see Shrek if you haven't. Join the following 24 years in the making.
But you won't be disappointed at the very least.
Nah, it holds up. It's worth it. It holds up, I'm sure. Was it you were watching it with Liz's kids, I assume?
Yeah.
Did they like it?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those that they've seen. It's, you know, they're little kids, so they watch the same thing five times in a row each day.
I just didn't know if that was them finding a new thing to watch.
No,
sometimes that does happen.
No, they've seen it before and were quoting it almost verbatim. So, but you know, okay. Apparently they like it enough to watch it five times a day. So
cool with me.
With what you will.
Cool with me.
Yeah. Kept them occupied while I could, you know, take a poop in peace.
Anyways, what else have you been watching, my guy?
Let's see. After that, I watched... I watched another family classic. Now, I don't know if you remember this one, but there, back in 1990, there was a movie called Shipwrecked.
Shipwrecked. Not off the top of my head. Is that kind of like Swiss Family Robinson?
A little bit. It's kind of like Castaway meets Home Alone.
I do remember this then.
Yeah.
I do remember this. Have we talked about it before? Either way, we're just going to...
Maybe or maybe not.
Either way, we're going to talk about Shipwrecked.
Yeah. So basically, the plot line is this kid in... I want to say he's from, like, Norway or Sweden or one of the, like, Bjorky countries. You know what I'm saying. Like, I'm not trying to make it racist, but let's be honest.
Yeah. You are making it racist, but still nonetheless.
Yeah, so, you know, they're all blonde and eat pickled herring, so what's the fucking difference?
Yeah.
Anyway, so he joins up on this sailing ship in order to be the new cabin boy, in order to make money for his family, who is impoverished. They're getting their farm's getting ready to be claimed by the landlord, what have you. And so midway through the trip, he... Shit, I'm trying to remember how he gets on the island.
Can I take a wild guess?
Sure.
I bet he got shipwrecked because it's in the title.
No, I know that, but I'm trying to think of how he actually... Okay, I remember now. Okay. Sorry.
I'm not wrong, though. I bet I'm not wrong. Okay.
They do put it on Front Street.
Okay. You know? Aptly named. I like this movie already.
It's not like killer robots show up halfway through and you're like, never saw that one coming.
Yeah, you're like, name it that then.
So... Essentially, they bring on this naval captain who is supposed to protect him from pirates. Turns out, long story short, as is shown in the very first scene, he's really a pirate.
Oh.
And a mutiny starts during a storm and he gets shipwrecked on the island. I'm not sure how long he's there, but like... Essentially, like, on the voyage over, he ends up finding the stowaway girl. I think her name is Mary or something like that. And he has to keep her secret to, like...
And this is the cabin boy?
Yeah, the cabin boy. His name is Håkan Harkonsen.
Nice.
Yeah, very, very, like, Swedish, whatever.
Yeah.
Nordic name. So he essentially has to keep her secret. She ends up getting discovered. Yada, yada, yada. There's a whole, like... thing that happens as the ship's going down. He has to like try and break her out of the brig and find the key, this, that, the other. He ends up getting washed up on this deserted tropical island, and in trying to find his way around, he finds a cache of pirate's gold hidden in a cave. And so he knows, like, immediately, like, oh, these guys are coming back. And stashed with the gold is this, like, wanted poster of this pirate who looks exactly like the naval officer that came onto a ship. So he puts two and two together, figures out this dude's coming back for his treasure. That's the whole reason he got this boat. Ends up meeting up with his friends who are stashed away on another tropical island. Lots of, you know, adventures, whatever. He sets up these booby traps, and then the finale is he has to lure the pirate captain onto the island, trap him there, and then make away with his boat and his gold.
Well done. So here's what I heard. Somebody had way too many kids. They sold their child into slavery. He gets shipwrecked. He home alone some pirates and escapes daringly.
Pretty much. Oh, and Gabriel Byrne is the pirate.
Oh, yeah. That's a must then. Yeah, that's a must. I feel like I have seen this movie. In fact, I would almost guarantee I've seen this movie. Because Home Aloning Things was quite the popular. I just watched I'll tell you more on that in a minute. I just watched a Home Alone-esque movie.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
But no, Shipwrecked. Gabriel Byrne, I like it, man.
Yeah, I wish I could tell you who else is in it, but it's all a bunch of no name. The thing I will say is that it's very obvious that it's a completely Swedish cast, and they just got ADR'd over it.
Oh, nice.
So there is a lot of, even the English speaking parts, like there's parts where Gabriel Byrne's mouth don't match up, and you can be like, well, why didn't you just record it on, like, he speaks English, like, just do the thing. So I don't know if there was like a communication thing, or if the actors were just sort of like mouthing the words according to like how they would sound in English, or like, what is it called? Like talking stereophonically, or what is it where you talk by ear or by sound, you know? Like,
I'm not sure what you mean, but I also know what you mean.
You know, like where you just imitate the language based on, you know, like somebody would tell you how to say something in Japanese, and you would just try to repeat it back as closely as you could.
Oh, yeah,
I forget
what
it's called, but
yeah, I gotcha.
Semaphore? No, that's flags.
I don't know.
anyway, so yeah, just bad ADR all around. Dude meets a militant gorilla.
Wait, what?
Yeah, like a gorilla. Not like...
Does the gorilla talk?
No, of course, it's a gorilla.
I don't know how fantasy this movie is.
No,
it'd be a magic
gorilla. But it is a dude in a gorilla suit.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
So you do get gorilla suit.
So you befriend a gorilla in the process, and I'm sure the gorilla has the Ewok army almost with him?
A little bit. You're not wrong. The gorilla steps in at some point and helps save the day. Yeah,
of course he does.
Just because, you know, the power of friendship.
That's the power of friendship with a gorilla. That's what he originally meant to write. I have an amazing ability, by the way, of hearing songs and be like, I hear what you're saying. This is what you really meant. I'll do it on the podcast one day. I'll show you some songs.
Tell me about Method of Love.
Yeah. Well, no, I'm sure. I mean, it sounds like a fun movie. I assume it's another kids movie.
Yeah. Oh, it's definitely G-rated. Cool. For sure. As far as early 90s Disney goes, it hadn't. I don't think we had quite hit the renaissance of Beauty and the Beast and Little Mermaid yet. I think they were still kind of focused. This was maybe one of their last-ditch efforts at a like live-action thing for the time being, because I don't think that... I think at that point they pretty much just focused on the animation aspect, no?
Probably. I don't remember there being a lot of good live-action... I don't know. Maybe Homeward Bound, was that Disney? No?
That might have been, sure.
I don't know. I don't remember. I'd have to do the timeline, but... I know they certainly fell off for a long time, because around that time, that's when the Disney Channel started picking up, and so they moved a lot of their live action stuff to like shows and things of that nature.
Right.
And so, because that's when, you know, all that started to hit, and they're like, oh, we need our version of that on TV. So, never know. I just transfer from one place to another.
Sure.
So.
Yeah. Just move it around. They'll keep watching.
Yep.
So, it's okay. It's kind of cheesy as far as even for a little kid's movie. Like, there's parts where you just roll your eyes. You're like, oh my God, fucking seriously. The dude made a trampoline out of banana leaves and vines. Okay, why not? With enough spring to launch a, you know, 500-pound gorilla into the air and surprise it. Like, come on.
Some industrious children out there, Michael.
Sure. I mean,
quite clever.
That's why we're moving all our manufacturing overseas.
Right.
You should see what these little Swedish kids are doing with banana leaves.
Indigenous to the Swedish island.
He made made an iPhone out of coconuts right. and leftover seashells.
Like the professor on freaking, anyway.
Gilligan's
yeah,
Island.
Yeah, for real.
He could make a TV and a satellite dish, but couldn't repair a boat.
Yeah.
What kind of fucking professor are you, bro?
He liked it there. He was the smartest guy there.
He's like, listen, I got an idiot, a fat guy, two old people, and two really hot chicks.
Yep.
I'm just saying. My chances are good.
Yeah, man.
I'm handsome, I'm rich, I'm smart, and I'm their only hope off the island, you know. Implications.
Ginger or Marianne? He's talking about implication. Ginger or Marianne, Michael?
Oh, God. You know what? I'm going to go Ginger. If I'm going to be stuck on a tropical desert island, I'm going for the peak. I'm going for the best of the best. Because I feel like, honestly, all I got to do is just wait around and Marianne will come to her senses. I mean, what other option does she have?
Yeah. There was a line in the past. He's like, Ginger, no contest. I'm actually Marianne, though. Anyways, we got sidetracked with a very important question. Anyways, what else you been watching, my guy?
Let's see. Oh, I forgot to rate Shipwreck. I'm going to give it... I'm going to give it... one friendly gorilla and way too much pirate gold. Yeah, how do they move all that pirate gold? That stuff weighs a literal ton.
It's like a cave filled with it?
Yeah. And they just snuck it off the island like nobody sees us. It's not like they're walking through the jungles just hearing like cha-ching, 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 cha-ching.
He goes to his cave. He's like, I bet they won't notice the old switcheroo. He's like, my gold is just gorilla poop spray painted gold, painted crudely yellow. This is certainly not my gold.
I'm not even curious about the gorilla poop. Where did he get this much gold paint? Where did
gold paint from? Yeah.
How did you make that on the island?
Who told you? Told you. Engineering, man. Anyways, what else have you been watching, my guy?
Let's see. What have I been watching? I think that might be it for me, no? Yeah.
That's well, cool. It. Well, we'll take a break and we'll come back and we'll do the second half of this show. And we're going to take a break from our sponsor, Mountain Dew Mist. You crack that can and you breathe that shit in.
We'll be right back.
You know, the mist we're referring to is not necessarily that of Mountain Dew, because it's really any carbonated drink, but Mountain Dew paid us to say that, so...
Did they?
No.
Oh.
I mean, yeah, no, of course not. Yeah, no, my friend Jay Beezy, he would always open up the Mountain Dew cans, or the 2 ounce liter, and he would breathe it in, and he'd be like, that's the cure for cancer right there.
I'm sure it's not.
There's no scientific evidence to back, but... to the best of my knowledge, he does not have that dreaded disease. So,
I mean, the evidence is in.
I know, right? So, anyways, yeah.
So, how about you, brother? Let me ask you, what you been watching?
Man, there's a lot of things that I want to talk about, but I think I'm going to wait till I finish the series or the series concludes.
Okay, like what?
Fallout TV show.
Okay.
You're a fan. Have you ever played the game?
I have not played the game, actually. I've seen other people play it, so I'm familiar. It's basically post-apocalyptic world, and you have to scrounge for scraps and build machines, and it's like resource management kind of thing.
Not really. I mean, Fallout 4 is a little bit more like that, but it's just like Skyrim, ultimately, but of a nuclear wasteland. It's the same company, Bethesda.
So first-person...
It's a role-playing game.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, but it's really, really good, man. And it's a really rich world, and it's like 1950s technology everywhere.
Okay.
So it's like, yeah, it's the... I'm not going to try to explain the entire backstory, because it's... I'll do a bad job, and then people will just be upset about it, but...
It's like trying to explain the Resident Evil background. Like,
yeah.
I could give you the basic premise, but I'm still leaving out so much.
Yeah, it's retro-futuristic is pretty much what it
sure.
is.
It's so. Like... It's like post-apocalyptic deco.
Sure. Yeah.
Like Art Deco from the like 40s and 50s.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it, yeah. Really good show, actually, though, man. It's got, I think he's on our Wall of Fame. If not, Walton Goggins?
Oh, he's definitely on the
Wall.
Yeah,
he's on the Wall. Yeah, I thought
sure,
he was.
For sure.
Yeah, as Sweet Baby Billy, or Uncle Baby Billy.
Alone. Oh, yeah, and as, what was the character from Sons of Anarchy? Oh,
I don't
fuck.
Know.
Anyway, the transsexual, I'm trying to be as politically correct as I can here, but he basically plays a trans woman. Very convincingly.
Walton Goggins?
Yeah. And commits to the bit. I mean, even to the point where people within the series refer to him, the actor, as her. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, like in interviews and stuff?
Yes.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, Walton Goggins is the man. So that was our least enthusiastic inclusion of the Wall, but I think it's because we were both like, he's up there, right? And we're not sure, but it's solidified now.
He deserves it. He's done enough character work to where I think it's warranted.
He's also just the man.
Sure.
He's also just allowed to be the man.
Yeah.
He's in it. He plays the ghoul. I forget the other actors and actress's name, but it's a really good show, man. And actually, as somebody who is a pretty big fan of the games, it's all canon, apparently. They worked with Bethesda Studios to really try to tap into the world. Jonathan Nolan, Christopher Nolan's brother, is actually the executive producer of it.
Nice.
It's kind of funny in the sense of he, Jonathan Nolan, speaks with an American accent, and Christopher Nolan certainly does not, as their parents, one parent was American, one spent a lot of time in London, and the other one didn't.
Okay.
It's kind of a trip, man. But yeah,
this is my brother.
Yeah, my brother, and he's like, what up, cuz?
So he's obviously from Baltimore.
Probably. I don't know where they resided. But it's a good show, man, and you do not have to be a fan of the game in order to appreciate the show. It helps. There's a lot of nod to things. But I like it so far.
See, that was my question. Like, that's kind of the difficulty on jumping on with franchises and stuff like that, is like, if you're not completely familiar with the lore, it makes it a little bit more difficult to follow relationships and stuff like that. So like, how do they do in terms of explaining the world around them? Because I know like for example, the Twisted Metal series, like they had all these cameos and all these different characters from the game appear. But if you're not familiar with that character, you were kind of lost. Like they never really connected the dots as to why this was important. Does that make sense?
I guess so. The only thing I know about Twisted Metal is I'm certainly not deep on the lore. To me, it never really mattered. It's a car combat game that you pick a character and you go into this
sure.
Calypso tournament and you just blow each other up. And so sure. It's like ancillary, whatever. They're all were. So if I see a character that's in there, like, they later in Twisted Metal Black got backstories that were kind of interesting, but they're all still pretty one note.
Sure.
But
and that was the problem with the series, was the whole like car combat thing didn't come into real fruition until episode 8. And so it was just all character based and story driven. And you're like, just show me a car shooting rockets and picking up power ups. I don't give a fuck.
Yeah. Yeah, I think they get there by the end of Twisted Metal series, so I'm interested in season 2 for that alone. But.
Sure.
No, this one, I think they do a pretty good job, because there's things where you can ask, is what's that in the game? What's that in the game? But, like, it doesn't really matter. There's, like, every creature that you run into mm-hmm. in the show is a creature in the game that you usually fight at some point.
Sure.
Sometimes they explain, everything's just mutated, so it's just, the baseline of everything is, oh, it's weird radiation. Oh, it's weird that, like...
Gotcha.
It just kind of, it doesn't really matter in terms of, like, there's vaults that are underground, and that was ultimately a company named Vault Tech kind of privatized Armageddon in the sense of there was enough scare of a nuclear holocaust to happen that they began to invest in these underground vaults, which were going to let society live on. And
like huge, like citywide vaults.
Yeah, it's like 200 something people live there at a time.
Sure.
And so, and there's multiple ones all throughout the nation. And so, yeah, it was in their best interest that the end of the world happened, and they kind of touch on that.
Okay.
So, without spoiling too much. And then it's the people in the vault are vastly different. Like, each vault was assigned something different. You don't find that out till later in the games. Like, some of them were all scientific experimenty. Other ones were like a genuine, like, 1950s community, and they all loved each other and prospered. And they, But it's interesting. You don't really they explain it well enough in the show that if you're into the games, it's its own story. There's a little bit of tie-in to certain events. Like at one point in the video games, one of the side stories you play in one of the downloadable contents is the communists attack Alaska. And so there was a Battle of Anchorage. And they mention it a few times. It doesn't really matter. Like the events of that are just like, oh, I fought in Anchorage.
Like you don't have to have the complete character history in terms of like, oh, well, this dude was there and this is how the battle went. But like they give enough general mention to move the plot forward.
Pretty much.
Okay, that's
it's,
good.
It's
that's
largely, good. You can dive into it if you want to, if you just truly want to know all the Easter eggs. I'm sure YouTube has thousands upon thousands of sites that will define it for you.
21 Easter eggs we noticed in the latest episode of Fallout.
Yeah, and like I said, so but it's not imperative that you play the games at all. I do like the fact that it is canonical in the sense of it takes place, I think they said 12 years after Fallout 4 or something like that. So,
oh, okay.
It's its own thing, but like all the events that have gone on are kind of...
So it gives them room to explore the world with characters that have already been pre-established in the game, or at least the character type within the game, and so also to expand on that in a new medium.
Pretty much. It's
that's good.
The pitch line of the show ultimately is like, everyone's trying to save the world. Those in power just disagree on how to do it.
Seems like reality.
Yeah, yeah, which is just, it's more brutal on the wasteland, which is what they call America, and so, like, even in, like, Fallout 3, there's 3 New Vegas and 4. Like, one takes place in Washington, D.C. in that area.
Okay.
New Vegas takes place in Vegas. I don't know where 4 takes place, but I think it's on the West Coast. Like, they haven't even touched, like, Florida, what's going on down there, so...
It's all mutated alligators.
Probably. Probably. I mean, it should be. It's just...
We got huge, big-ass pythons.
Big-ass swamp cats.
Big-ass garden hoses.
But it's
swamp hoses.
It's a good show, though, truly, and I haven't finished it yet, so I don't want to talk on it too much, but
okay.
I do recommend it. Like, I'm genuinely digging it. Really well shot, really well made. The other one I got to talk on is X-Men 97.
Wait. Before you do that, you got to rate Fallout.
I'll do that when I finish the series.
Fair enough.
I got 2 more episodes to go, even though they dropped them all. I'm just doing it at a slower pace than most.
Okay.
So I will come back to it. So another show that I've not quite finished, but I just got to give it a shout out, is I think it's the best television I've seen this year. X-Men 97. Still firing on all cylinders. Just watched episode 9 today.
I have not seen that episode yet, so let's keep that spoiler free.
Okay.
But what do you think so far?
It's good, man. I think this is the penultimate episode.
Yeah, it's 9 of 10.
Yeah, and so I'm really interested to see where this one's going. It ends on a banger, but the last like 3 or 4 episodes have all just been...
I mean...
One-upping.
The middle of the season starts with a literal genocide. And not just a genocide, but like kaiju genocide. I mean, like the way that they shot that giant sentinel attacking Genosha. I mean, it looked like a Godzilla movie, or like not even a Godzilla movie. But it looked like something out of Neon Genesis Evangelion or Robotech or something like that. Just the sheer amount of explosions and chaos, and just the style of the animation was so gorgeous, and yet. It was an American twist on something that looks so familiar. Like if you've watched, you know, chaotic end of the world, last of humanity type stuff in anime, like it's all very familiar imagery, and yet they put such a good twist on it.
I agree with all of that. They just put the X-Men spin on it, and
yeah.
I like the animation style. One thing that this show continually does very well is in their little hints to things is in Ultimate Alliance, the video game that we play, one of the things that you can do that's really cool is you can combine your powers with another person
for
greater damage.
Right. For combos.
Yeah, and they do this really well. Like, for example, in the first episode, non-spoiler, like Gambit charges up Wolverine's claws, and he destroys a Sentinel with them. And Nightcrawler, in one episode, teleports with Wolverine and drags him, and you see it first person how it teleports or whatever.
Oh, like what it's like to be in the teleportation hole.
Yeah.
Where, like, It's basically like he's in a black hole and Wolverine stretches to infinity and then is snapped back.
Yeah, and it's really cool. So in this one, they do some of the teamwork things they do where like Jean Grey will lift something with her mind for someone else to punch and whatever, and they just work really well together in tandem. And it's cool to watch.
Like team unity or like team cohesion.
Synergy, I would call it. Yeah. There's a synergy to it all, and they
Mr. Synergy?
Yeah, I would. He's in it too. So I like the fact that they keep doing that. You know, it's like the old fastball special, Colossus throws.
Sure.
But they found creative ways to do it, you know. So they keep that rolling. I cannot wait for this to end. We'll probably do a deep dive after that.
For sure. Let's do it.
So X-Men 97, watched an old school classic.
Okay.
And I'm not going to do a book report on it because I'm sure most people have. I watched the old, I think it's a 1970s cartoon, I think, Animal Farm.
Oh, George Orwell.
Yeah, the old fable, as they call it. Man, I forgot how good that movie is. There's a much longer version, but I watched, I think, the 70 or 80 minute version.
Okay.
The cartoon that we watched in high school, or we watched, I don't know if you did.
No, I actually read the book.
Oh, yeah, I know. You actually read your assignments. I ain't none of that.
English major.
Yeah, I know. But, I mean, it's an incredible cartoon, man.
Sure, yeah.
And they dance around the darkness of it just perfectly enough, where it's like, I mean, everything is pretty heavily implied. I don't think there's much blood in it or anything like that, but it paints the picture pretty well in terms of, you know, they use the music, for lack of a better word, and do what it's supposed to do to tell you how to feel about things.
Sure.
You're like, this something's up to this Napoleon character. This Napoleon character hasn't said anything yet, be it every time you see him, he has a certain look, or they play a certain...
A tone,
A tone. You're like, oh, this is some ominous shit going on here. And then, like, you know, Snowball, when he's trotting around doing his thing, and he's so well-liked, it's kind of dope, and I get that it's...
Was Snowball the one that eventually turned to communism, or was that... No, that was the one that got sacrificed.
Old Major was the one that originally had the idea. Old Major was the one that said, like...
the Karl Marx of it all.
Yeah, he said that, like, hens, you should never be separated from your eggs, you know.
Means of production.
Yeah, the means of production, ultimately. Which, if you haven't figured out, we'll just lay it out there. It's a giant analogy for the rise and fall of communism. Mm-hmm. And it's really masterfully done, in my opinion. And I don't know much about it. I'm not a big history buff. Pretty much everything I know about the rise and fall of communism, I can always go, oh, that's that character in Animal Farm.
I mean, so it did what it was supposed to do.
It did what it's supposed to do.
And it dumbed it down for the masses.
Yeah. And so, like, Old Major is the one that's like, hey, whatever, I'm not going to be here much longer, but how about this? And they overtake the farm and they get it.
Right.
Oh, Snowball has all these big plans and Napoleon ends up feeding him to the dogs and runs him out of town.
That's right.
Yeah, and Snowball was that dude, man. He was going to build a windmill, and then Napoleon came and stole his idea. And
yeah, that's the Snowball would be like Lenin, and Napoleon would be like Stalin, basically. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. And ran it to the dirt from that point. So I don't know. I dug it. The whole. I don't know, again, I'm not trying to do a book report of it, but. Boxer.
Essentially, it is.
It kind of is, yeah. I like the idea that Boxer gave his all, you know, and it was like the blood, sweat, and tears of Oscar the horse, or Boxer, excuse me, Boxer the horse. Mm-hmm. He built everything, and he was as strong as 10 people, and like they even sold him up the creek just by an injury and stuff, so it's...
Yeah. I mean, it's essentially, yes, it's the strongest amongst us should be heralded for, you know, what they can contribute, and then as soon as they can't contribute anymore, well, we have no use for them.
He worked himself to death.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it's a perilous tale of, yeah. And I like the his buddy Benjamin, the donkey. He was a G. He saw everything.
Oh, yeah.
He was there for it all. Yeah, but I do like the idea of just like the way they took Jones Farm, how Jones was an alcoholic, and like, you can't imbibe an alcohol, you can't sleep in the bed. The idea that they slowly start to change the rules. You can't sleep in a bed with sheets. All animals are equal. Some are more equal than others.
Right, exactly. Like, except for pigs.
Yeah, it's all bullshit, man. So yeah. It just goes to show you, like, a lot of these systems that we have in place, whether it be capitalism, communism, socialism, whatever it may be, so much of it looks great on paper.
Sure.
And the issue is once human beings get involved in things, it all goes to shit, man.
It all works on paper. It's in practice where it all falls apart.
Right, you know? Right.
Like
practical application of things.
Right, right, right. Well, and essentially, you know, it's the story of seeing something in its purest form, and its original idea, and it's that idea is great and works for the benefit of the most people, and then seeing how the ego and the gluttony of humans or in this case animals corrupts that system, and then you witness it fall apart and you're like, well, of course it fell apart because humans are humans and they're gonna fuck it up.
Yeah, it's powerful people doing what powerful people do, wanting more power, man. That's all it is.
What's the quote? Power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely.
Yeah, absolute power corrupts absolutely.
So. I think Wesley Snipes said that.
I'm sure he did in one of his many, many fine roles. But for anyone that hasn't seen it, though, definitely do yourself a favor and watch Animal Farm. Really worth it.
Is that a Rankin and Bass?
No, it's not Rankin and Bass. I forget who did it because I thought it was too until I saw the opening
sequence. It's very similar.
It's very similar to their animation style, but it's definitely not.
Okay.
But yeah, really good one, man. I recommend that. I will give it 4 sticks of dynamite to blow up a windmill. It's weird though, man.
That's a specific.
Yeah, no.
Read the book.
Yeah, there's a lot of parallels and things, and it's without really getting into it. I really would like somebody to write in who knows more about this and really give me their opinion of it, because like to me, I don't know enough about Marxism. I know a little bit about the rise and fall of the Soviet Union. It actually was still going on when I was born. It was like fresh off, you know. I was born in '86. Yeah. So by the time I started gathering memories,
yeah, I guess it all fell apart in like what, 90, 91, something like that?
Like yeah. I remember the fallout of all that. Right. I don't really
the fall of the Iron Curtain.
Yeah. And so when I was in kindergarten, they still had maps that said Soviet Union or USSR.
USSR, right.
Yeah. So yeah. But I'd be interested to know though, because it's just funny to watch human beings do human being stuff, which is all predictable behavior of like, I feel wronged, or I'm already reaping the benefits of sitting around here doing nothing. Like, why can't I just squeeze a little more? Squeeze them.
The
squeeze
entitlement.
Them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Squeeze them. He kept saying, squeeze them. Like, yeah. And then other people would, anytime there was a disarray at Animal Farm, I forget the vendor's name, but he would come in and cash in on whatever was going on. I forget. It was one of the farmers that he would started doing business with the outside. They started doing trade. It was Wiggly or whatever the character's name was. Some
you're close. It's not that exactly, but you're within hitting distance.
Yeah, and once the outside world started trading, it was like, oh, we are going to take your eggs now. And it's like, wait a second. I thought this whole thing was predicated on just a little bit of eggs. It's all the eggs.
Right. All right. Yeah.
So, I don't know, man. It. On paper, a lot of that stuff looks good, man. It's just the execution of it is where we falter. So I don't know.
So what do you get it?
4 sticks of dynamite.
Four sticks of dynamite. That's right. That's right.
The other thing I'm going to do real quick, because I've been on my crime kick again, and one of them just started coming back out, and again, it's something that's not finished, but The Jinx Season 2.
Okay.
The Robert Durst one.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's Robert Durst who, I guess this one is focused on how maybe some of the information in the trial was misrepresented and he might have a way out.
This one, no, because the season one ended and it ended with a doozy. That's when he was still mic'd up.
And he went to go take a piss and he was like, of course I murdered him.
Of course.
I murdered him cold blood. I shot him down.
Yeah, he didn't say all that, but he said, of course you did it. And he's like, they got you, or something like that. I don't remember the exact quote, but he does say, of course you did it. All from a note that he wrote to somebody saying cadaver with this exact same handwriting, exact same address, right. Everything. Like, man. So they're reopening the case and they put a warrant out for his arrest and he immediately went on the run and started pulling out money and getting, and they caught him in, he moved from Texas and he got caught in Louisiana.
Mm-hmm.
And so ultimately,
which of all the places you're going to run to, Louisiana,
like, he was trying to go to Cuba, apparently.
I mean, I could think of several countries that would not extradite. That would be much better than Louisiana or Cuba, but that's just me.
I don't know.
If you got Robert Durst money, fucking go all out, no?
He maybe knows someone in Cuba that could rearrange the rest of it. I don't know. Maybe that.
That just right.
was point A, you know, right, in many right. stops. So, but yeah, it's ultimately what I would like to call this show is stop doing interviews. Stop calling people. Stop putting your face out there. Stop incriminating yourself. That's what I would like to call this series.
Subtitle, shut the fuck up.
The fuck up. You know what I would do?
If I got away with murder.
And I didn't have no army, I would shut the fuck up. Oh, wait. You did get away with murder. Yeah, same thing with OJ. Just lay low.
Right. All you had to do was just...
Nothing. Just sit there and just...
Live off that retirement fund.
Yeah, don't do any... He just likes to talk too much. And so season two is they reopen the case, given the information that was found on the first documentary.
Uh-huh.
And now they're starting to bust his shit wide open because now people are starting to come forward. I will give credit to this, for better or for worse. He largely took care of his friends, except for the ones that he murdered. but the ones that are...
You know, except for that, he was a great guy.
No. I'm just saying the loyalty that his friends show to him is kind of admirable in a way. I mean, you're defending a murderer, but they're suckling at the power teat, so I get all that.
Yeah, why would you want to turn off the faucet? Like, even if the faucet is poisoning everyone around you, if it's still good drink to you, I'm going to keep that faucet going.
Right, see Animal Farm.
That was a callback.
Yeah, there's something admirable about the loyalty in which his friends show, but like... I don't know, man. I have a couple friends who are in prison right now, and like, I can still love that person and not condone what they did.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
There's I still have infinite love.
Right.
Do those people deserve to be in jail? Yes.
Probably.
No, there's no probably. They do. I still love them to death, though.
Sure.
I don't love their actions on those days by any means, but I don't know.
Well, I mean, but there's a certain element of, It's like the BTK killer, you know, like they did an interview with his daughter and she talked about how like, yes, he's done all these horrible things and I'm totally convinced that he's done them. But like, ultimately my memory of him is he was my dad and he was the one who took me to the pool and
right.
threw my birthday parties and was like sticking carrots up his nose to make me laugh. So like, it's hard for me to justify or rationalize like, he's this person to me, and yet he's this other person to so many other people. You know? Like, and I get that. There's a certain element of this person was so influential and so such a part of my life that like it's hard for me to think about them in terms of the other.
Yeah, because I never saw that.
Right. Yeah. Not even a hint. And I know the people you're talking about for sure.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And so it's weird. So I commend his friends for being like, I don't want to, and some people, I don't want to deal with it. The one guy who was ultimately going to be, he thought he was going to be his downfall, Robert Durst, because
mm-hmm.
He had this banger of a testimony to say. He ended up covering for Robert Durst until his wife called the police and was like, hey, he's not giving you all the information. He's covering for this asshole
right.
for no reason.
Right.
And so then he's like, well, I really thought long and hard about it and da 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 da. And
it's like, had to do the apology tour thing.
No. He called the officers later, the prosecuting officers, and was like, hey, I thought long and hard about it and I owe some, he was friends with one of his Robert Durst alleged victims. I owe it to her to try to do the right thing. Like, you've been sitting on her for 18 years and your wife makes a call and now all of a sudden,
right.
Like, yeah, dude.
Something ain't adding up. Miss me with that shit.
Yeah, miss me with that shit. And it's good whatever got you to that point to try to maybe have some justice is good.
Oh, it was.
But your wife's the hero here, not you.
It's he was about to be prosecuted for fucking perjury. That's what it was. I better cover my ass because otherwise I'm liable in this and I'm going to do some time or pay a fine or whatever, you know, whatever the cost may be. But it wasn't worth it to him. You know, the cost of keeping the lie got to be too great to where, well, now I guess I better tell the truth.
Yeah, when it's you're on the precipice of it, you just need a little nudge. But good on the wife. She's the hero, not you, dude.
Right.
And even then, you wasn't a slam dunk testimony like you thought. You went back and forth on it with your own lawyers five times. And then, by the way, all of those conversations are recorded. So the defense was just like, hey, remember when you were talking to your lawyer and you said you didn't hear what he said? And
then prosecutor.
Oh yeah, and he was talking to his lawyer and was like, you remember when you said that to him, that you didn't hear what he said, and he mumbled something and you couldn't make it out? And then you said it again, and now you're sitting here saying that, like, I definitively heard him say this. Which is it?
Right.
Yeah. I don't remember saying that. Like, yeah, buddy, sit down. Like,
right.
Sit down.
Right.
I'm talking clown.
Well, let's go to the tape.
Yeah, for real. So I'll review that when they finish it up. I'm sure I could Google how it all turned out because it's taking place 3 years ago. But I like the
show.
Don't
want to spoil it.
I like the show, man. I don't want to spoil the show. So. That brings me to one of my final ones, and then I'll get out of here. I watched a documentary called What Jennifer Did on Netflix.
Is this another one of your true crime makes Michael Dudley uncomfortable situations?
No, those are usually the cult ones. So
that's true. That's
this
true.
Is ultimately some woman, some young lady, I guess fresh out of high school and into college, I guess into her college years. I call her a young woman. It opens up with her making a phone call right after her parents had been shot.
Uh-huh.
And they're like, oh, I was tied up. It turns out her dad lived, just got put in a coma. And it's an interesting story, and it's only 90 minutes because you really couldn't stretch it any further than that.
Okay.
Because your first initial reaction is, she did it. And the reason, or not necessarily that she did it, but she certainly knows what's up. Because the reason you can come to that conclusion so fast is because there's only three people.
In that room?
Yeah, one of them's dead, one of them's in a coma, and one's you. So it turns out, if you haven't seen it, fast forward this, because I'm going to spoil the whole thing. But turns out she had some boyfriend or whatever that she wasn't allowed to date because, surprise, surprise, you can call what I'm about to say, like, racial stereotype or whatever. Some of it is true. She was Vietnamese, and she had really overbearing parents.
Okay.
And a lot of immigrants alone, just, they're like, I came to this country, and I busted my ass, you're not going to be nothing. You know what I mean? I gave up everything I had for you. So they're incredibly overbearing to the point where it was just kind of seemed like a loveless household. Like, started playing the piano at one, and, you know, but she wasn't really top of her class and anything. Turns out,
like, really gifted kid, but just still not living up to the parents' expectations or desires or whatever.
Yeah, pretty much. And she started seeing this boy who was a drug dealer at one point. Mm-hmm. And her dad forbade them. He was like, no. Like, no. And he's like, oh, you just don't like him. You just don't like him. He's like, no, you're a drug dealer and he's going to bring you down. Mm-hmm. The dumb shit that he's wrapped up with is going to bring you down. So, no.
Fair cop.
Yeah, so you can do this over my dead body. Mm-hmm. Turns out. Yeah. You see where I'm
really going? Dead.
Yeah. So, turns out she ended up setting up a hit to kill her parents from her stupid drug dealer boyfriend. And lied about it. The whole time was saying that, like, it all started to fall apart again, which, when she started getting interviewed, which leads me to my point. Michael, if I were to leave this room that we're in right now, and you were to leave this room and you go your own way, and somehow you ended up murdered, and I had absolutely nothing to do with it, but I was the last person to see you alive.
Sure.
Please don't take this the wrong way. I'm going to get a lawyer from the very first time I speak to the police.
Oh, yeah.
And not because I've done... I mean, if I'm truly innocent, whatever. Even, like I said, if I've had nothing to do with it whatsoever, I'm getting a lawyer. I'm getting a lawyer right then.
Yes.
And they go, we just want your story. That's cool. You're going to get it with him in the room.
Like, 100%.
Because I already know how... or especially if it's, like, your spouse. Like, 9 out of 10 times, it's the husband. Let's just be real. It just is. You can be mad at that. You can, yes.
Them's the statistics.
That's why women want to run into bears in the woods and not you. Or whatever the argument is. Whatever the argument is. I got
all
tired
I know
of
is I'm less desirable than a bear. That's all I know.
That's all I know. I don't care to know anymore. But, like, if Angie were to go missing and, like, again, 1,000% innocent, I'm getting a lawyer. Step one.
Right.
Like, with the second, oh, just come in and tell your story. Like, all right, a second... you guys come do your crime scene thing. The second you ask me to go downtown, I'm staying quiet.
Oh, no. The second the shiny bracelets go on,
no,
shut
not
the
even.
Fuck up.
Not even if you're under arrest. I mean, the first time you go, let's just hear your story about where you were and what happened.
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
Like, I'm getting a lawyer. Why do you need a lawyer? Not an arrest. You know why.
Right.
9 out of 10 times, it's the husband.
Right.
You know
if I mentioned one time that we had an argument where we were really shouting at each other, well, obviously there was motive there. Because yeah, you were so distraught over this one conversation that...
Or you're going to twist my words in a moment of me right. being weak, of me being like, I don't... Did I say that? I don't remember saying that. Right. I was really distraught.
Oh, well...
Yeah, no, we ain't doing that.
You fucked up, right?
Yeah, you we're not doing up. That. So that would be my moral...
What was it? Was it 10:35 or was it 10:45? Well, I think it was 10:35, but I was in there for 10 minutes, so it could have been 10:45. Oh, well, you told me it was 10:55, so...
You know what you did right there, right?
You know what you did right there, right? Where'd that 20 minutes go, Marcus?
Yeah. That's my Michael doing his best scene from Menace to Society.
That's right.
So, well done. Well done. But yeah, no, like, I don't get it. And it's, oh, why you want a lawyer? Like, bro, you know why.
Right.
You
right.
know why. I've seen...
Because I'm surrounded by cops who, yeah. let's just say, could hold what I say against me in a court of law.
Yeah. Even, like I said, even if it's just the original questions of, like...
Where were you?
You came home and you found her dead. I'll answer all of that in about an hour. All right? Like,
let me talk to my counsel first.
Yeah, let me talk. Like, we're not doing this. Well, you have, if you've done nothing. Yeah, I know all that. I know right. all of that. And I'm going to maintain my innocence right. this whole time. But I don't care how it looks to the media. I don't care how it looks to anybody. You know who got a lawyer before he even said a syllable to the cops?
Goddamn right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because there's a lot of innocent people in jail.
Yep.
And there's a lot of fucking criminals that are walking around free because they got a lawyer.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, watch the first 48.
That's right.
It's like, anyone that goes and talks to the cops, they're like, you know your buddy's in the other room. They're like, yeah, yeah, no, it was Ray Ray. Because one of them's going to roll you.
Right.
It happens right. every time. Right. But everyone on that show.
Because all they're going to do is just play each other again. You know, like, oh, we're talking to Ray Ray, and we got Little Jay, we got Nipsey in the other corner.
Yeah, and they're like, it was Ray Ray.
Right,
he did
exactly.
that. I was there, but I mean, I can't get in trouble for that. They're, oh, no, you are.
Right, right. No, we promise. You tell us what happened, you won't do a day of jail.
Yeah.
Turns out, whoops.
And then if
didn't say that with a lawyer present, so it doesn't count.
Yeah, and then if you... watch like the first 48, anyone that just says nothing and they're like, I want a lawyer, I want a lawyer, they'll be like, Ray J walked free that day.
Although Ray J went to trial for 6 months, he was eventually found not guilty.
Yeah, just shut up. So anyways, it's actually a good story and it doesn't overstay its welcome. I did learn that Canadian police are allowed to lie to you.
Really?
Yeah, I learned that.
Here's a hint. So are American cops.
The way they do it's a little bit different, and they can't generate false evidence, I don't think.
And they never do
that. Oh, I'm not saying they don't. I'm just saying the techniques in which they're allowed to use are different. For example, their story started falling apart. Turns out, like, she was going to college for 4 years uh-huh. to be a pharmacist. She printed up a fake degree and just, like, didn't go to college. And you're
oh,
like,
shit.
Oh, she's willing to lie about that? Oh, okay. But no, the Canadian police or whatever said it was kind of a good lie, but it's bullshit 1,000% when you see it from this angle. They're like, you know those satellites that have all that heat detection and stuff? We reviewed that. And what it does is it shows images of bodies, shows heat signatures in a house. And so the time you're saying that you were tied to that banister, it's showing that you weren't tied to that banister.
Oh, just completely lying.
Completely
like
lying.
We have spy technology that was watching you at the time.
Yeah, Toronto PD satellite. Feed of heat signatures, like
sync up Toronto link.
Yeah.
Give me the satellite feed.
Yeah.
Like,
which,
like, it's fucking NCIS or something like that.
Yeah.
Like,
that's, yeah. Lowly police officers have that kind of. Yeah, dude. That's not happening.
Right, right.
But she started to crumble at that point. And yeah, it was just funny that they said, like, we have your heat signature and it says that you weren't upstairs at the time you were saying that you were tied to the banister.
Well, maybe I got the timeline wrong, and
that's when it all starts. Also, you called us while you were tied to a banister with both of your hands behind her back. You want to show how that happened? How you could be on the phone and make a call to us? Well, it was like this, and I was like, it wasn't like that. So, that would be my moral story.
The killers are going to go through all the trouble of, like, executing everybody, and yet they're going to leave your hands tied behind your back with your cell phone in right. your hands.
Yeah. Yeah, it sucked, though. You could tell it was going to go south when it was supposed to. She was supposed to... The guys were supposed to murder her mom and her dad. Turns out the dad lived and was put in a coma. And so when he came out of that coma, boy, was he ready to talk.
I'm awake. I need a steak and I'm ready to talk.
Somebody give me
some oatmeal. I got things to say.
Yeah. Let's get this tube running. Let's go.
But I'm going to take a mad whiz.
But he told the officer, use your police techniques to figure out what Jennifer did. He immediately blamed his daughter, like a good immigrant probably would do. Like, it is her fault, this failure. Which I do, the only thing I empathize with her a little bit is it did truly seem like their parents were incredibly overbearing and like just genuinely fucked with her sense of self.
Sure.
To never be good enough. And one of the reasons why she was so obsessed with this boy is because he was like the only one that saw her and saw the situation for what it is and confided in him at that.
Sure.
Problem is she went psycho after he started getting a new girlfriend, and that didn't help the situation either.
Of course.
So I did kind of feel a little bit of sympathy for her there. But at the same time, you're an adult now. You can just move out of your parents' house.
And that's sort of, I get
that's a cultural thing, and like I understand that certain culture, like the parents just have a lot of say. Like, you cannot date this boy or this girl if I say so.
Sure, sure. And I understand the importance and the impetus of like childhood trauma, generational trauma, you know, like the sins of the father being passed on to the sons, and like the things that fucked up your dad are going to be the things that he fucks up with you, you know, like I get that. But there, and you and I know people who have horrible childhood trauma, you know, like some of the most devastating stuff you could imagine, you know, you use your imagination, you know. Right. The problem is that we also know people who have gone beyond that trauma and built themselves into better people. And we also know people who have fallen into the trap of using that trauma as a crutch and just been like, oh, well, I'm so fucked up because my parents fucked me up.
Yeah.
You know, but at some point you have to become your own person. At some point you have to be willing to stand up and go, I am going to be more than the sum of what my parents made me. And it's a difficult thing. I'm not trying to say that it's not. I'm not trying to say that it's an easy thing. It's probably the hardest thing you will ever have to face in your life, hands down. You know. But in the same breath, it's on you because your parents fucked you up, so they're not going to be able to fix you. It's up to you to fix yourself.
I agree. I agree. I'm glad that you added that it's not easy. And sometimes it just is what it is. People are just made differently. Sometimes people just can't overcome it. And I think her sense of self was just genuinely messed with enough that she didn't feel confident in the fact of being, you know, because she said, I love my parents. When they said it was the ultimatum of him or us, like, I chose them. So, like, I love them.
Right.
But, like, I don't know. You smother the life out of, I mean, it's kind of sad in that sense. I mean, she still could have. Who knows? Obviously, there's something very emotionally wrong with this young lady.
Sure.
To sit there and also, she like stalked her boyfriend's number and was saying, yeah, whatever. It's a whole different thing.
But she had a plan.
Yeah, but so I do empathize with her, or I guess sympathize with her a little bit on that. But yeah, dude, if when you're an adult, you can go, hey, you know what, Pops? I'm tired of living. I want to go be a failure. I want to go work. I want the job with the least amount of responsibility possible. That's what I want.
Right.
I want to go mop floors and whatever. Like,
right. As long as I'm paying my rent, you can't say shit.
Yeah, you can't say anything.
Right.
Yeah, and if you want to be a part of my life, if you love me, then you'll accept that and you'll come be a part of my life in whatever capacity you or I can work on. But outside of that, I'm out.
Yeah.
And those are those hard lines.
Fuck you, Dad. Yeah. It's not a phase.
Yeah, and that's where those hard lines got to get drawn. So I will give what Jennifer did 4 very real predator-like heat vision satellites. That apparently the country of Canada just has patrolling all of our homes at all time. So, big shout out to their overinflated budget of police standards. Which I'm glad that he lied about that. It's kind of funny to me, though. Like, yeah, you know those heat things? Yeah, we got you, girl.
You've seen the movie Predator, right?
Yeah, it's like that. The satellites. We got that shit honed in on you on the night of the crime. So, what the fuck you talking about? I wasn't upstairs. Oh, we know! Oh, we know! Now, her dad said that when he came out of the coma, he was like, there were 3 gunmen, which she did say, but they were like, and then I looked up and I saw Jennifer come down and she was in conversation with one of them. And it wasn't like she was like, no.
What are you doing?
Yeah.
She was, my God, you killed my parents.
Yeah.
You bastards.
It's like, that's why.
Shoot him again.
Yeah, that's why he said, you find out what she did. I knew it was this dirty bitch.
This dirty bitch.
I knew it was. Oh man, pivoting off of that.
Should have never gave you money.
I know. I just picture the angry Vietnamese dad, like, you find out what his dumbass daughter did. I knew it was her. She'd been a failure. I've been telling her that shit her whole life. Anyways, the last movie I saw, we'll get out of here after that. I saw a little bit of Star Wars on the Star Wars Day.
Okay.
Went and got some free comic books. Episode one, better than I remember. But
really?
Yeah.
Even with the whole Jar Jar Binks?
Yeah.
Okay.
Better than I remember. It has its flaws, I'm not saying that, but it's better than I remember.
Oh, does it?
Yeah. It's just, I gotta remember that Star Wars is definitive to some people. You know what I mean? And it's...
Sure.
Tonally, it's actually, to me, it's not too far off from the original Star Wars tonally.
Really?
Yeah. No. But,
even with the, like, everything shot on green screen and, like, no actual location.
Yeah,
and...
no, we'll dive into episode one. I saw episode two, and that does not hold up.
Okay.
they wrote a love story. Like, Anakin's the most unlikable asshole ever. And
she's a whiny bitch.
Yeah, Princess Padme is terrible as well. God dang. How does this... You need to force feed me this love story.
Force feed you?
See what I did there?
Hey.
Anyways, I do want to talk about a big stunt movie. The kickoff to the Oscar... Or not the Oscar... The summer movie season.
Okay.
I watched The Fall Guy.
Oh, the Ryan Reynolds's.
Ryan Gosling.
Baby Goose's.
Yes, Baby Goose.
One of the Ryans.
Yep. And Emily Blunt, who's awesome.
Sure.
And my man, I like the entire cast. Winston Duke was in it. M'Baku himself.
Really?
Yep.
Blow my back out?
Yeah, that's the best joke ever. The best thirst tweet. He said, M'Baku can blow my back out. Hey, you appreciate that one.
Big meaty men bumping meat.
They have Hannah Waddington or Hannah Waddingsworth from Ted Lasso.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, she's really likable in it. So, like, Aaron Taylor Johnson, who I genuinely like in everything he does.
Sure.
Good cast. It's kind of disappointing, though. Not anything that the movie did wrong, but it was kind of not what the box office thought, man. And they were really hoping that this movie would kind of break that trend.
Sure, yeah.
And it did not.
I mean, this was essentially supposed to, like... set off the summer blockbuster, like, bonanza, basically.
Yep. And it kind of whimpered at the box office, which, it's weird, man, in the sense of, it does nothing wrong. Like,
okay. So it's not like the movie itself is flawed.
No, I also have, and this is what I wanted to talk about, I have a big soft spot for, as a martial arts, you know, movie fan, I'm not, like, I don't watch UFC or shit, I like the movies. Like,
sure,
I like
right,
my choreograph, but...
like. Fake fighting.
Yeah, I have a lot of respect for stuntmen, and the director, David Leitch, is a former stuntman.
Yeah.
He worked with, and we've talked about it before, he worked with the guy who directed Chad Stahelski, who directed John Wick.
Yes.
They used to be stuntmen that worked on The Matrix, worked with all kinds of great movies.
Fifth Element, all sorts of shit.
Yeah, and so David Leitch, Purdue, he has a company called 87 North, and they do the stunts. They did it for, like, that movie Nobody. They did it. He directed Atomic Blonde, directed Deadpool 2.
Oh, right on.
Yeah, so he really is one of the few guys that are really bringing back action movies.
Yeah.
And the premise of the movie is the Fall Guy is a stuntman. So the movie is made by stuntmen,
about
stuntmen,
right.
For stuntmen. I mean, obviously the audience as well, but it's very, like, it's a love letter to the stuntman, which I know that's based off the TV show back in the day with, who was the $6 million man?
Oh, Lee Majors.
Yeah, Lee Majors. Yeah, right. Thank you. I remembered Steve Austin, the character's name. I remember his.
He's here!
He's here!
Stone Cold!
In a robot suit.
It's the $6 million beer man.
It's the $6 million rattlesnake. So yeah, it was good, and they set a Guinness Book World Record of flipping a car 8.5 times. Do you know the movie that had it previously, Michael?
Movie that flipped a car 8.5
times. No. The Fall Guy set the record just now. They broke the record. Do you know what had it previously?
For flipping a car?
Yep.
I would have to say maybe Bullet or Fast and the Furious?
No. Wanna know what it was?
Sure.
James Bond, 007, and Casino Royale.
Oh, really?
When he swerves out of the road to not crush Rebecca Ferguson, I think her name is.
Was it Eva Green?
Yeah, Eva Green. Yeah,
Eva Green.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah.
Rebecca Ferguson.
Vesper. Yeah.
Yeah.
To not kill Vesper. That was the world record. 7.5, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
And then this one flipped by one half more.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's a...
That's an interesting measurement in terms of like how much that matters just by like a half a turn.
Yeah. Yeah. It's
really flipped it 8 times? That's impressive, actually.
I mean, you could tell they went for it. Like I said, it's made by stuntmen, about stuntmen, for stuntmen. And they say it's a love letter, like really opening up the movie. I think they do now in most theaters. They have a little introduction from the director or the star. And they say it. This is our love letter to the stuntman who makes a lot of cool things possible that we don't. There's little jokes in the movie, too, about like, oh, yeah, you're a stuntman. You guys get Oscars for that? And he kind of like shakes his head like, no.
Which, by the way, they should.
Agreed.
I mean, I don't know all the great stunts you've seen in your life and the singular people that have made that happen.
Yeah, there needs to be more recognition for it in terms of that scale. And so it's really fun to watch. It's stunts all throughout. So like I don't know why this movie didn't hit.
It literally should be a summer blockbuster. It's all stunts.
If a movie is supposed to entertain you, this movie checked all the boxes.
Sure.
Super likable cast, super charismatic. It's a love story that's fun to watch. They're both really, like, their chemistry is palpable. Really, really, really cool stunts. They jump a truck 250 feet, dude.
Like, nice.
Yeah, it's rad.
That's cool as shit.
The whole final fight sequence is, they can wink at the camera because it's about stuntmen. And right. So the whole final fight scene is like, obviously some gangsters come and they fight a stunt team. And so they're clipping them to wires and flipping them and dragging them away and having smoke bombs go off on them and pyrotechnics. So.
See, I thought it was going to be the opposite where it was like fake beer bottles getting smashed over their heads and like going through like plywood walls and stuff like that. But they're like actually clipping them into like stunt, like wire work, stunt works, like stunt riggings.
Yeah. And dragging them all across on motorcycles and stuff. And
that's
like,
that's cool.
That's the final sequence. And I mean, I can tell you about it. It doesn't know justice. You have to see it. Also, like the kung fu, you have to have some form of martial arts training to be a stuntman and like how to take a punch and take a fall. And so it's just a series of like, we have a really cool idea for a stunt. Let's get this character in that position to do this.
Sure.
And it works, man. It really works. That's and it's cool. Ryan Gosling being super likable, Emily Blunt being super likable.
As they always are.
Yeah, in a series of events that are super fun on the eyes to watch, and I'm impressed by the stunt team doing it. So it's kind of like, it was a little bit disappointing in the sense of this was also, box office hasn't been doing that well. Still family movies have been hitting, but like it's been on a lull. And a lot of the worldwide box office has been kind of saving the day. But I actually really recommend this movie. I had a great time at the cool. cinema.
Wait, so what do you think the problem was? Like, why didn't it just do the blockbuster that they thought? I mean, do you think people are holding off for, you know, the Deadpool Wolverine of it all? Do you think that they're holding out for something better? Do you think maybe the summer blockbuster is going away, or maybe just this one didn't generate enough interest to really warrant that?
I honestly don't know. I think there's some factors. I think Deadpool Wolverine is far enough away, because that doesn't come out till July. And so right. You have a month and some change gap between that. Like, it's, you're usually looking at about a 3-week window, and usually sometimes a single weekend window.
Right, right.
Like, Kung Fu Panda 4 came out and did pretty well. Godzilla's been killing it at the box. It. Yeah, Godzilla X Kong or whatever, which I do kind of want to see just because.
Okay.
Yeah, I think Godzilla's the most malleable character of all time. But
I would disagree with. I think he serves a singular purpose.
Either way.
He works best on that level.
Either way, well, that's a different discussion. So, like, those movies are doing well, but, like, the domestic box office for all of those has still been somewhat disappointing. I think Deadpool Wolverine is going to do gangbusters. That movie's going to print buckets of money.
Yep.
But in terms of why, I mean, we can blame, I know coming out of COVID was one thing, and then movies like Dune or something like that has shown that, like, yeah, it's back. Mario was one that was like, yeah, people are going to movies again. I truly don't know what it is, and I'm interested to know. I'm actually been listening to a Florida State graduate, Dan Merle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like him a lot. Yeah. He's funny. He breaks down stuff, and like he was saying that The Fall Guy is the fifth or in the top five of 80s live-action remakes of all time. And it was really? Like, yeah, it was Jump Street, 21 Jump Street, 22 Jump Street, Equalizer 1, 2, and 3.
Okay.
Funny. So I don't really know. It was just too much of an investment for people to try to get babysitters and stuff, but it's always been that way. I mean, movie tickets have been close to, depending where you're going, They have options now where if you don't want to see it in 3D, it's going to be less. If you don't want to see it in D-Box, it's going to be less.
Sure, sure.
I mean, a $15 movie ticket isn't absurd ask to me.
You're getting the basic streamlined movie at that point. I mean, you're getting, like, if you're lucky, they have the reclining chairs or whatever. But
which most
you're still
do
not
now.
Getting it in Dolby sound. You're still not getting it in IMAX. You're still not getting it in, you know, D-Box or 3D or what have you. But
the Dolby sound thing, it's still surround sound. It's just not that Dolby DTS thing's a whole different ballgame.
Yeah, it is.
I love it, but hey. But I don't know, man. It's kind of sad to watch, though, because I love going to the movies.
Sure.
And I don't want movie houses to close. Even then, like, the number two movie at the box office was the 25th anniversary of Phantom Menace.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, and it made, like, $9 million, which was good for it. You know, sure. It's 25th anniversary. You got to remember, like I said, that is some people's Star Wars.
Sure, yeah. That's the Star Wars that a lot of people today, like, they saw that when they were nine. And
yeah.
Now they're finally growing up. They're starting to have kids. They're starting to what have you. You know, like, hey, let's go take the kid to go see this movie that meant a lot to me. Which is what they did in 96 for the original Star Wars.
Exactly. You know? Exactly. So, in terms of why it's flopping, man, I really don't know. Again, it checked all my boxes. And I do have a special soft spot in my heart for stuntmen. Mm-hmm. A lot of alliteration there. I barely got through it, but we're going to keep that take. So I do have a soft spot just because I don't firsthand know, but as somebody who appreciates what they do, it's like, man, this should be well received by everybody, and yeah. We should put these people somewhat, give them their moment to
shine.
Like
the craftsmanship of it.
Yeah, and so I don't know. It's sad to see. I fully recommend it, though. If you get a chance to go see it, I don't see how you can walk away from that movie and not be entertained.
Cool.
In terms of just asking what a movie to do is, hey, entertain me for the next little bit.
Yeah.
I promise you it will do that.
Right. Let me just buy a bucket of popcorn and some jujubes and be transported for a minute.
Yeah, and it's weird because you would think that, okay, so like even the Marvel movies now have diminishing returns. Just whether you love it, it just is what it is.
It is what it is, right.
It's funny to hear people say that, like, it's because Disney's woke. By the way, Marvel Comic Books has been writing progressive stories for the last kabillion years since their inception.
Yeah.
But here nor there. I understand some of the pandering, I get it. But they've been doing that for a long
well,
time.
Well, if that's your if Marvel is going woke is your excuse for why they're not doing as well as they were, you either A, don't know how the movie business works, or B, have never read a Marvel comic book in your life. Because,
yeah.
I hate to tell you, but the X-Men is pretty much about either the Black Civil Rights Movement or the gay rights agenda, depending on how you look at it.
Both, yeah. It's any
objectified and subjective minority.
Yeah,
it's fit in the X-Men as an allegory.
Yeah, it's so, and they've been doing that for a long time. Like, hey, by the way, I hate to tell you, Rogue, first written black. So when they're like, oh, they're gonna cast Rogue and it's gonna be black. Yep, there's precedent for all of that. So like, get over yourself.
That's right.
I get sometimes messing with the characters just to do it. I get a little bit like, eh, but I'm going off on a tangent. But it's weird in the sense of, so Hollywood box office summer, all right? Or like the summer box office. It's a pre-existing IP that has a built-in fan base. It was a pretty popular show back in the day. I know the theme song stood the test of time. so it's not Marvel. It's not something that you're drawn, like, feel has saturated the market where you're getting one every single month.
Right.
They've slowed down on that. It's not anything that you've quite seen before.
It's not a James Bond. It's not a Fast. It's not a whatever IP you have. You know?
Yeah, it's so. And then they say, like, oh, well, people only want existing IP. Like, Barbie was an existing IP, and that says, oh, yeah, that was a smash. And it was. You know, but at the same time, then you get an original story like Oppenheimer, which does gangbusters as well. So I really don't know what people want anymore.
Right.
It is an IP. It's a fun action movie. It's an original one. Give me something I haven't seen before. I've never seen anything like this. There was a stunt that they did that probably to most people would be like, eh, whatever. I'll just say it. I've seen it done in multiple shots where it'll start a flip and then they cut to underneath it and it'll go over.
Oh, like he's flipping over a car or over somebody or something like
it's
that?
It's a car that gets flipped. It does a front flip over another car in real time.
Gotcha.
And I thought to myself, like, I've never seen, I can't think of that shot being done in one take before.
Well, where it just completely flips over and lands?
Yeah, I've seen it. Like, I know in, I think, the second Captain America movie, one flips over, I think, Nick Fury.
Yeah.
Or whatever, and right. It's slow-mo, but it's like a camera shot from him on the ground.
Right, they'll do the camera shot where it's him shooting at the car, and then they'll cut to the car flipping over, and then they'll cut to the car landing behind whatever.
Yeah, right? And sliding. Yeah. Right. I never saw it over an entire, like, one, it's like a perpendicular. Like, one car is parked this way, the other one's charging at it, sure. Like the passenger side. A detonation happens, and it does an entire front flip over. I was like, I've never seen that.
That's cool.
And so me, maybe I was just kind of like,
it, just like in one take.
Kind yeah, of and I, so it's for me, it's checking all the boxes of like, so to answer your question, I don't know why this movie hasn't taken off.
Okay.
And I know I've said that like 6 times, so I'll get off of it. I don't have a solution, but damn it, go support movies. This shit is going to go away. I understand your couch is comfortable, and I get and I respect all that, but I don't know.
I mean, there's also something to be said for watching something with a live crowd. And we've talked about it in terms of like, the reaction that you get in a live crowd with a bunch of people in the theater is completely different than you watching it by yourself on your couch at home. You know, like if something funny happens, you might, you know, if and you're watching it by yourself, you might get a little like, whatever. But then when you watch it with a crowd, you might hear somebody in the back has a weird laugh, or like the laugh extends for longer than you would have done by yourself, you know, and it makes it funny again.
Or right, like, it's infectious.
Yeah, exactly. Like, there's something about feeding off the energy of the crowd that makes that moment so much more momentous and so much larger, you know?
It's weird. They do all these testings with a group of people. They rarely don't just sit you down in front of a DVD player and go like, yep, we're going to watch this individually, just you here in a room.
Right, right.
They do it with like 80, 90 people in a room, and they're like, oh, it garnered a lot of laughs for that reason. They literally track the laughs a minute or the volume of, oh, that got a big laugh.
Making it like marking down in time, like, all right, at minute 15, we got a huge laugh. You know,
yeah.
3 minutes later, not so much of a laugh. Or right. Like the crowd reacted at, in this way at this time when this scene happened.
The crowd stirred at this point. You could tell, and they poll people afterwards. So it's weird in the sense of then people go and watch these movies, and it's themselves. It's like 4 people in a theater, and they go, yeah, it wasn't that funny. Well, the whole reason it tracked is because when they tested the movie, it was like 80 people
right.
in a room.
Right.
And so, of course, like I don't know. It gets frustrating to me just because, again, I don't certainly support the theaters as much as I should, but I still try to go.
Sure.
It's like It's like going to buy a comic book every once in a while. Like, I went to Free Comic Book Day. The only reason I didn't buy anything is because the line was a literal hour long.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, I love you to death, Fallout Comics, and thank you for having 25% off everything in store today. But, like, I don't have an hour to wait in line.
Right.
You know, but I'm going to make it up to them. I'm going to go this weekend. So, I don't know, like, you gotta support the stuff you love. And so, if it's going to the movies, cool. If it's just sitting there on Netflix and doing it, I guess that's fine, to each their own. But, I don't know, I think we're missing out on something.
I mean, it's literally the difference between listening to an album in your room, in your headphones, versus going and seeing the band live. Like, it is a completely different experience. Like, even if, like, let's say the band was to do exactly how it was recorded on the album, there's still the aspect of the lights and the crowd and the ebb and flow of their emotions and seeing how they react to individual moments and you feeding off of that and recognizing that and or internalizing it and seeing how you feel about how other people are reacting to it, you know? Like there's this certain aspect of this untouchable emotional and sentimental roller coaster that can't be duplicated by yourself in the dark on your couch.
I fully agree, my friend. Fully agree. I think we're beating a dead horse at this
sure,
point, though.
Right.
I do. But no, you say what I said, but just smarter. So I just am more passionate about it. But yeah, I'll give The Fall Guy a glowing review. I'll give it a fall from an 80-story building.
Nice. On fire?
He gets set on fire a lot.
Nice. That's all I care about.
Their love story works too, actually. It's pretty fun to watch.
Okay.
So, yeah. Again, it checks all the boxes, man. So, anyways. Well, on that note, anything else you got to share?
That's it, man. We're good to go.
Debated box office. We've talked about getting lawyers. We've talked about...
It's been a true watch.
True watch been watching. So we got to come with the structure next week. I'll get a mailbag coming up here soon.
Yeah.
All right. Again, we're on Instagram at whatcha been watching. Write us in at whatcha been watching podcast at gmail.com. You can find us on Facebook. On that note...
Instagram.
Yeah, I said that. And we're at whatcha been watching. That's right. Just look for that beautiful banner, and we'll be there. All right, on that note, I would say to go to the theater, watch a movie.
Talk about it with somebody that you love.